The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, headlines from a prince's daydream at Selhurst Park as Harry defeats a palace and destroys their will. Elsewhere, Nathan Jones, you'll be gone before too long, question mark, as Saints lose again. And Mersey beats, with Liverpool defeated with ease by the Bees and Everton getting a smiting from Brighton. Friday, it's FA Cup action with Everton taking on Man United. We'll be talking about that and so much more in this Totally Football Show. Thursday the 5th of January. Listener, hello to you. Not sure where you are or what you're doing, but I hope it's all going well. I'm currently sat in the Athletic's fine-looking studio with a fine-looking Benji Lagnado of Pickfair.
Hey, Jimbo, look at us, IRL.
Exactly. So close I could literally reach out and touch you. Ooh, feels good. Also here, the Athletic's new January signing, Duncan Alexander.
Hello. Woo-hoo.
And joining us via the magic of technology, Charlie Eccleshare. Bet you're jealous, Charlie. Look at us having fun.
I am. I feel like I'm sort of just on the outskirts of this party looking in.
All right. Well, we'll try and bring you in as much as possible. Duncan, welcome to The Athletic. Did they make you stand on a chair and sing something?
Not that I remember, no. So, okay. Yeah, it's been, been here 3 days now.
Three days, yeah. Right. Did they make you do a why I joined
they
earnest?
They did. I didn't make it too earnest.
All right. Did you just put, a couple of symbols and a ka-ching? Because that's the thing. Whenever you sort of say, why I joined.
I got to say, brilliant, obviously brilliant score for The Athletic, but it's got to be one of the most predictable signings since Nico Cranchard turned up at QPR in 2013 to play for Harry Redknapp.
Right. Or Darren Ferguson going back to Peterborough.
He's just done it again, hasn't
Fourth
he?
Fourth time, yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Fits like a glove.
I think he's going to...
Congratulations.
He's going to manage Peterborough for as long as his dad managed Manchester United, but in like 17 separate spells. It's going to be good.
Hmm. Very nice. I see actually on Twitter that your Why I Joined tweet is your new pinned tweet, which is a shame because it replaced the one I really liked before, which was, each day in the Premier League, there is one main crisis club. The goal is never to be it.
Yes.
And never more has that tweet been...
Well, I mean, it works every single week because now we have a big 7 or 8 or however you want to divide it up. There's always one of our favourite clubs in...
Who is it this week? Because this week I would actually be hard-pressed to tell you which one. Is it Saints? Is it Palace? Is it Everton?
Liverpool, I would say.
It's the crisis club. Yeah. Really? Charlie, what do you got on that?
Liverpool, Chelsea as well.
Really? Crisis club? Have you seen Everton? Have you seen Saints? Palace?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I suppose Everton, but they're sort of perennially in crisis, it feels like.
Yeah, Liverpool's crapness is actually quite shocking, whereas Everton's crapness and Southampton's crapness is sort of...
Yeah, I think the crisis club, to give it far more importance than it deserves, it is, yeah, you're right, it's about a kind of shocking thing that happens. Like Charlie said, Everton struggling is kind of like, all right, fair enough. But Liverpool, I mean, they were so bad at Brentford. And
really bad.
I mean, Brentford had 2 goals disallowed by VAR as well. So, yeah, I think at the moment, particularly also losing Van Dijk for a month or two.
Yes. Let's talk about the midweek scores then. Drama on Merseyside. Liverpool beaten at Brentford, leaving them 7 points off the top 4, leaving the Bees just 2 points behind them. Meanwhile, neighbours Everton, fresh from drawing at Man City, promptly went and lost 4-1 to Brighton, shipping 3 goals in the space of 3 minutes like they were Brazil or something. London teams, Arsenal, dropped points at home for the first time this season in a goalless draw with Newcastle. They're 8 points clear, though, the Gunners of Man City, until at least City played Chelsea on Thursday evening. Spurs beat Palace 4-0, and Leeds and West Ham drew 2-2. Also this midweek, Man United won 3-0 against Bournemouth, and finally, Nottingham Forest won their first away game of the season, scoring only their second goal on the road of this campaign in a 1-0 victory at St Mary's, which represented Southampton's 6th defeat in a row. This Wednesday also marked the passing of one of football's most prominent figures in recent years, David Gold, co-owner, co-chairman as well of West Ham, who passed away this week at the age of 86 after a short illness. Gold, who famously grew up literally across the road from the old bowling ground and also represented, and I must admit I didn't know this, represented West Ham at junior level. Benji, what a piece of West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of disappearingly rare that you have a fan owning a club these days. So, you know, in that respect alone, he was quite a remarkable guy. And, you know, you could absolutely, with the sort of Golden Sullivan era, you can absolutely disapprove of where their money came from or their decision to move to the Olympic Stadium. But it is indisputable that where we are now is significantly better than where they picked us up. So I think most West Ham fans will have absolutely spent periods of time hating Golden Sullivan vociferously across social media and everywhere else, but would also accept that there has been continuous progress. And yeah, rest in peace.
All right, and somebody who I think, as much as they might have disagreed with, some of the decisions made was doing them for what he thought was the best of the club.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the Olympic Stadium move was one of those things that I think, you know, we just had to do. It will go down as their legacy. And you might hate the new stadium and have loved Upton Park, but it was probably objectively the right decision to make at the time. And I think, you know, history will probably look fondly at that decision.
And as you say, in a game increasingly dominated by kind of shadowy overseas funds and that kind of thing, a man like him represented something of a... Well, it's a bit of an end of an era type.
Yeah, I mean, we won't get owners in the Premier League like Golden Sullivan again. And some, you know, their methods are often, you know, pretty old school and pretty traditional. And at the same time, they've actually achieved quite a lot of progress for West Ham. But yeah, you know, whether you like them or hate them, you know, Golden Sullivan are of an era that you know, we won't see it again.
Well, our best wishes to David Gold's family and friends.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and begambleaware.org.
Right, midweek action. We talked about crisis clubs. What's the opposite of a crisis club, Duncan?
Clover Club.
Clover Club. What, who's your Clover Club of this midweek? Is it Brentford, perhaps?
I mean...
Or Brighton?
Yeah.
Or Spurs?
Yeah, or Manchester United, maybe.
Ooh.
There's lots of clover. Unusual for early January. It doesn't really grow in
these. Is that right? I've had it as a perennial. But do get on to the football.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, Brentford, obviously, but that's the opposite of the crisis club, isn't it, I guess? So, I mean, Brighton continue to impress. They just looked, you know, really, really solid again and took Everton apart. But yeah, I think probably Spurs is the one, given they were probably the crisis club coming into this week.
All right, Charlie, I want to ask you about this because the first half, had you met a Spurs fan who'd left at half time, as they might have felt justified in doing, and had to explain to them how a 4-0 Spurs victory came about, what would you tell them?
Well, scoring first, it turns out, is quite a helpful thing to do. Obviously, they hadn't done that in their previous 10 games. It was a really weird game because the first half, certainly the second half of the first half, Palace were well on top, very nearly scored, looked like they were going to, and you kind of felt, well, here we go, Spurs are going to go behind and they're going to have to come back. They did play with a lot more intensity in the second half, and they've got a world-class striker in Harry Kane, whose form has been sensational this season. Obviously, because of Erling Haaland, we haven't really talked about it all that much, but he just produced two moments of quality that there hadn't been in the game up till that point. Palace hadn't taken their chances. And then from there, Palace capitulated a bit. And it is a reminder, and what's been so frustrating for Tottenham is how good they are when in front, because they like teams to attack them so they can hit the space in behind. And that's what happened, you know. And we haven't seen Spurs be able to do this since... They played Everton in October. That was the last time they'd been ahead or gone ahead, scored the first goal. So, yeah, it opened up for them. And then they've got clinical players. Obviously, Son finally scored, ending his drought. And they looked like they just had suddenly a lot more confidence.
They also had the second start of the season for Brian Hill, who looked Bernardo Silva-esque there in midfield.
He looks like, with his floppy hair, he looks like an artist's impression of David Silva. And there were moments where he looked fantastic. Is he going to be a fixture now for the rest of the season, Charlie?
Ish. I mean, Kulusevski will go straight back into the team once he's fit, but it does at least mean that if Kulusevski's out, which he has been for a lot of the season, hopefully they have someone who can come in and shoulder some of that creative burden, because he had a good cameo in the Champions League and a lot of Spurs fans were saying, well, you know, give this guy a chance, and he didn't get that chance. This was kind of back before the World Cup. Obviously now things have got so desperate really that Conte hasn't had any other option. And he is a really, really gifted player. And when they signed him, there was a lot of excitement. I remember speaking to people in Spain who were like, this guy is really, really gifted. And he's got a really good attitude. He is lightweight. You can see that. But he puts a shift in. So this is long overdue that he's had this sort of impact. And I think there's always been a suspicion, justifiably, because Conte has said as much. Conte let him go on loan for the second half of last season and more or less said, this guy's not ready for the Premier League. But you could see it made such a difference to him getting that assist for Kane's second. He wanted to be on the ball. He was trying to make things happen. Whereas I think, understandably, he's looked a little bit inhibited and just sort of recycled and not really taken players on, which is what he's really good at.
All right. Spurs have an interesting fixture list coming up. Portsmouth in the FA Cup this weekend. It's the third round, of course. Then the North London derby. Conte talking about potentially Richarlison, Kulusevski and Bentancur being back for that. As it is, Spurs 2 points off third place.
Yeah, it's extraordinary when you think that Newcastle are being hailed, you know, rightly so, as having this brilliant season and being in the title race. And they're a crisis club up until last night. Spurs, a mere 2 points behind them. It does feel very, very odd. And obviously a lot of that has been because, as has been well documented, results have generally been a lot better than performances for Tottenham. But they are still, they're very much in that top four hunt. They came from further back last season. And as you say, getting those players back will be massive. And I think, you know, it's become frowned upon almost to complain about injuries because it's tedious and everyone has to deal with them. But there are just times where teams get affected particularly badly. And I think Spurs certainly have missed Kulusevski big time this season. He's a player they really struggled to replace. Bentancur's massive for them. So, and Richarlison's been very stop-start. So that would make a massive difference to them if they start to get those players back. Mm.
I also think people have sort of forgotten what it's like to have a season when most teams are dropping points quite a lot. I mean, even City have dropped points in 5 games. You know, Arsenal are the only team really who haven't done it very much, which no one saw coming. But you know, they're in the 40s for points. You know, we've had seasons recently when we've had two teams streaking away like that. Now we've just got a really big, you know, mass, probably down to even Brighton and Brentford, who are, you know, within striking distance of the top four. So it augurs well for the rest of the season, to be honest.
Mm. Spurs then back in clover. What about Brentford then, Duncan? And Tuesday night's 3-1 bullying of Liverpool. Scenes after the final whistle when the DJ dropped Free From Desire, a gala track.
Mm.
And everybody just went limbs, as they say. Even the Sky presentation team, with the possible exception of Jamie Carragher.
Yeah, he'd done it in a previous game, hadn't he? I think when they smashed Manchester United. So, you know, what goes around. I mean, it's funny because I remember going to Brentford a lot as a Wickham fan, when there were fewer fans and they didn't dance in the game. So, you know, it's not been a permanent thing. But, you know, they're having a very good season, a very good kind of era. And they tore Liverpool to bits. Mm-hmm. You know, Liverpool just looked terrified. There was a good piece on The Athletic from Ahmed about how...
Straight away in there with the plugs.
Well,
there you go, contractual.
Yeah. But but it was looking at the corner routines that Brentford do. And, you know, they've obviously exported set-piece coaches to other clubs across the division. And they're just so good at it. And, you know, they mix it up. It's almost getting to like NFL levels of they've got so many little routines up their sleeve that they can trick the opposition, and that's what happened to Liverpool. They just looked completely baffled.
They had the ball in the net 4 times in the first half. Only 2 of those were given. They had more good shots than Pickfair, Benji. Actually, that's not true, because Pickfair have literally tens of thousands of great
millions, right. Now, Brentford are amazing. I think it's one of the great sort of truisms of football that when a team is more than the sum of its parts, then that's down to the manager. And, you know, ultimately, you look at their lineup, it's unexceptional, and they are playing top class Premier League football.
And their lineup in this game without top scorer Ivan Toney is they extended their unbeaten run to 6 games, a series of matches in which they have beaten Manchester City, drawn with Spurs, and won at your friend's West Ham.
Oh, then they'll probably do it again this weekend in the Cup. And Wissa, I really like him. I think that if we assume that Tony's going to be out at some stage for a while, I think he's a pretty natural replacement, even though he's a completely different player. They played with essentially two up front with him and Mbeumo, and Liverpool couldn't handle it. And I found myself looking at Klopp, looking like he'd sort of run out of ideas, looking at Frank, and thinking this guy is absolutely one of the best managers potentially in Europe at the moment, and wondering whether he could end up at Liverpool, because he's got that sort of Klopp energy about him. It would not surprise me. And Liverpool, honestly, it's sort of startling. You can say the same. You can say the same with Chelsea, that these were Champions League winners within the last 2-3 years, and they are suddenly like really subprime, aren't they? They're not.
Yeah, they were in for that quadruple last season, and the question is whether that has maybe taken its toll, because certainly Freed from Desire might be a bit of a commentary on some of the Liverpool players' performance. Yeah.
I mean, Liverpool, this is what, their second meltdown season in three, given that, the lockdown year, again, they suffered that post-winning the league hangover. And we talked about this a few weeks ago. I mean, they did sort of recover then and finished third, got Champions League. Champions League qualification looking ropey, and that could be massive in the Jude Bellingham saga.
Mm. One of the factors in that bad run that you mentioned before was when Virgil van Dijk got injured, if I'm recalling correctly. And oh my word, he was taken off at halftime here. His performance hadn't been great, but it turns out there is an ongoing hamstring injury. Not surprisingly, after the amount of action he's been seeing, a recent FIFPro study indeed showed that of all the players in the 32 World Cup squads, van Dijk has actually played the most minutes for club and country since the start of last season. He's going to be out for a while. He's not going to be playing many minutes for a while.
Yeah, at least 6 weeks, maybe even longer. And I think, you know, Charlie makes the good point there about the meltdown season 2 years ago. It is strange. You know, Liverpool already conceded 51 big chances this season, like clear-cut chances.
How many would you expect them to?
Well, last season they only conceded 53.
In the whole
season.
So
they're two behind that. 2018-19, when they came second, but a lot of Liverpool fans would say that they were actually better that season than they were the following season when they did win the league. They only let in conceded 41 all season, but the meltdown season after they won the league in 2020-21, they allowed 82. And that's basically, they're on course to, well, do more than that this season. And it's kind of the same issue. It's not exactly the same issue, because I don't think they'll miss Van Dijk as much as they did then, but it is, the defence has stopped working and it's just so easy to get through. And the number of one-on-ones that they're allowing is just... is insane.
And Van Dijk, sort of whisper it, he's not the same Van Dijk as we had in that Champions League winning season, in the Premier League winning season. He is a lot more vulnerable. He certainly looks a lot more vulnerable than he used to. You see players going past him fairly regularly now, and that famously didn't happen for ages and ages. Or, you know, the core of that team, the core sort of like elite assets, are on the decline, I think. He's on the decline. I think that Fabinho, who was arguably one of the best defensive midfielders in Europe for a couple of years, he's on the decline. Salah, post new big contract, he's not quite the same player. Like, I just don't think they're as scary, anywhere near as scary as they have been over the last few years.
They could be about to unveil Cody Gakpo. And I know a lot of people say, well, their issues in midfield. But as we've seen with Spurs, Charlie, one informed striker can cover a multitude of sins elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, and talked about this at the start of the season, losing Sadio Mane, I do still think that was a little bit underestimated at the time, how massive that was. And yeah, we should say as well, I mentioned before with Spurs and injuries, clearly Liverpool have had pretty rough luck there. But yeah, to Benji's point, they feel like they're in that transitional period where they're moving from one thing to the next. A lot of those players, Fabinho is a great example. I mean, wow, that guy used to be so good, so effective at stopping counters and allowed them to play in the opposition half, you know, and they had Van Dijk as well, and they could take those risks. They just can't really do that anymore. They look too vulnerable. The key thing, though, with this, when you're making that transition, is that you keep qualifying for the Champions League, you know, even if you're not winning titles or even competing for titles. And that's the problem that they face. Again, you know, once they start getting players back, maybe it's a different picture. I mean, Gakpo, I'm really curious to see, because I don't think scoring those goals in the World Cup against opposition that's probably going to be inferior to what Liverpool are playing most weeks, you know, shifts the dial that much.
Although he was having an amazing season at PSV before.
He was. And I think that's more significant, because I think he was someone who a lot of clubs looked at previously, didn't quite push on to go for. So it will be really interesting to see if he has kicked on and how quickly he can slot in, you know, whether, because I think ideally they'd phase him in.
And I think the issue there is that you can't really rebuild your side over a guy that might be a second choice centre forward. To Jimbo's point, I think it shows that Jude Bellingham could be critical for Liverpool, because you can build a team around Jude Bellingham. You know, just shoving lots of, you know, attacking options into your squad doesn't feel like an identity. a rebuild, a transition? Because otherwise, I'm not sure what this transition is. Where's it going? Is it being built? What's it being built around?
Well, yeah, you look at the squad, and it's the if all the players are fit, which is a a big ask. But they've got Diaz, they've got Diogo Jota, which he just gets forgotten about. You know, he should be back soon, and then just a multitude of other players. I think people do need to remember that when teams are transitioning, you will have some bad seasons. Like Manchester United, before they started winning the league in the mid-2000s, the couple of seasons before that, Ronaldo's first couple of seasons there and Wayne Rooney's first season, United were terrible. But to Charlie's point, they did still manage to sneak into the Champions League, which kept them ticking over. But you're not going to get the seasons like Liverpool had last season and 2019-20 every year. But I think some fans do forget that a little bit.
Happen. Does Klopp still have the vim? That's the thing. You look at the teams that Klopp started with and they're really bad. You know, they're so average. You've got players like, Joe Allen playing for Liverpool. And he managed to go for, and he's a good player, but he's not an elite Champions League player.
Been in a European final more recently than Lionel Messi, to be fair to Joe Allen.
Yeah, that's true. But in terms of where the journey he took that team on, that required a huge amount of energy and time. And I'm not sure I can see him doing it again.
Has he got that recipe? Can he bake that cake again? I hear what you're saying. That's probably enough Liverpool chat, though, because there's other clubs knocking at the door. Clubs like Everton. If Liverpool were free from desire, Everton took 4 from De Zerbi. We'll talk about that next.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScore Bet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal 5 players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScore Bet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play Squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScore Bet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Oh, and that's short from Idrissa Gueye. And a chance to race clear for Pascal Gross. It's an impudent finish. It's 4 for Brighton. It's an absolute disaster for Everton.
Yeah, Brighton 4-1 winners at Goodison Park on Tuesday. Colin Miller pointing out, you'll enjoy this, Duncan, that Brighton have now scored almost as many goals on Merseyside this season as Everton have. They've had 7, the Seagulls, Everton with 8. Wow. 4 of those 7 coming in this match. First time that Brighton have ever scored 4 goals in a top-flight away game. And it's also their first time ever having 3 straight wins on the road. 3 of these goals coming in the space of 6 minutes. A kind of remarkable firestorm of freewheeling Seagull action. Duncan, what impressed you?
Mitoma again. Yeah. I mean, he obviously had a really good World Cup, and I think that's now he scored in 4 of his last 5 games. Mm-hmm. He just looks amazing. Like, he plays, his dribbling is some of the best dribbling we've seen in the Premier League for a long time, I think. And he adds such a sort of directness to Brighton's play, which really helps them. The young striker Ferguson as well. I mean, pretty on the nose for Everton to get bashed around by a striker called Ferguson. But there we go. But he's apparently, you know, talked of in Ireland as this as one of, you know, their next great player. And you know, almost the one thing everyone feared was Brighton getting a good striker. And here we might be.
There's a great line from Kieran Maguire, the Price of Football guy on Twitter, that Brighton's four goal scorers, Mitoma, Ferguson, March and Gross, cost £5.6 million between them.
Oof.
Which is incredible. And the scary thing, again, is that Brighton are amazing at finding these players like Mitoma. But now their academy is starting to contribute as well with Ferguson. So, yeah, what a club.
Yeah, what a club indeed.
I mean, wasn't there a thing as well that Alex Iwobi cost around the same as the whole Brighton team for this game? And I do think Brighton are... I find it frustrating sometimes when you find managers... people talking about clubs and saying, oh, but, you know, the players just aren't good enough, and, you know, naming players with disdain. And then you look at Brighton and their players, you know, a year or two ago, a lot of these players, you'd be saying the same thing, but it's about how you coach them, how you develop them, and also finding people like Mitoma before you have to spend 60, 70 million on them. You know, that's kind of the skill and the way they've been able to do that. And then, you know, you look at some of the guys who scored. I don't think Solly March is a player who many top Premier League teams would be really excited about, but he's playing exceptionally well, scored a really nice goal in this game. And it's just great to see that, you know, with everything stacked against them, you know, when you look at sort of the biggest clubs in the league, the richest clubs, that they can still punch above their weight to this extent.
Although the richest clubs tend to get their revenge. Am I right in saying that the architects of all that great scouting and transfer business have now done one to Chelsea with Graham Potter?
Yeah, for the time being.
For the time
being. But I mean, the only thing you contain in caution to that is that I remember similar things being said about Swansea when they're in the Premier League. Mm. You know, they play really good football. They were able to sell players to bigger clubs and replace them with similar players. But eventually, you know, that cycle does come to an end. And so, yeah, enjoy it, Brighton fans.
But they didn't have the kind of Moneyball arbitrage owner styly type people up there. Did they?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, not to this extent, but I mean, I do think we are seeing also a bit of a shift of, you know, like clubs, Bournemouth to an extent, Brighton, Brentford, as we've talked about today, you know, they really are, they do things in the right way. And like we said, you know, they're getting players who aren't the biggest stars to perform way above their supposed natural level. But football's a team game, and it always will be.
Wise words, Duncan. The team that Brighton will be facing on Saturday at 3 o'clock in that FA Cup are Middlesbrough. Ooh, Middlesbrough on fire, literally, at the moment under their new manager, Michael Carrick. He's taking them from 21st. They were languishing in 21st in the Championship in October. They're now fifth. Fifth. Wow. As for Everton, they're not fifth. They're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, my goodness. 18th. 18th in the Premier League. How did this game happen? Just 1 week after they'd managed to hold City to that 1-1 draw with a tremendously disciplined performance, and now here they are getting whumped 4-1 by Brighton. Are there any conclusions we can draw from that?
Well, all I'd say is I do think that City game was a bit of a freak. I think they had their XG was something like 0.08 Everton, which was literally the grey goal. And they did well, but it's a very different challenge sitting everyone behind the ball, being organised and hoping you get the luck, which they did. You know, on another day, City might score 2, 3, 4.
Right.
That's a different challenge to then, can you get the balance right against a team like Brighton with attacking them, but also not leaving yourself too vulnerable? And that was a challenge way beyond them.
Correct.
I mean, they did score possibly one of the most consolation goals ever in Premier League history. The last shot of the game, a penalty, which, you know, I literally, one of the quietest cheers you'll ever hear for a goal. More boos than cheers, I think, as it went in. Yeah, I mean, if you're letting 3 goals in 5 minutes, 6 seconds, then at Goodison Park.
The saddest line from this game I was listening on the radio was in the match report, they said that actually there weren't that many boos at full time because most people had left. So there weren't even enough people there to really make their point with a big old boo.
Well, among the people heading out the door could well be Frank Lampard. A lot of talk that this weekend's clash with Manchester United in the FA Cup could represent the last roll of the dice for Frank. One win in the last 11 in all competitions for Everton. We'll talk about the FA Cup soon enough. Elsewhere, though, in the Premier League this midweek, Benji, you're West Ham. A thrilling 2-2 draw away at Leeds. What was bigger, the point one or the 2 points dropped?
No, the point won. I think there were lots of positives in this game for West Ham, especially for Moyes, because the prevailing debate this season has been sort of two apparently conflicting arguments. They're actually just both true. Argument one, David Moyes is the best West Ham manager of the last 30 years. What he's achieved in the last couple of seasons, consecutive entries into a European competition, even if one of them has been recently made up, has never happened before. And that's largely down to him with an average squad. However, you know, argument two, so far this season, we've been
So why is West Ham's best manager of the last 30 years unable to get a better tune out of this side?
So the kind of obvious theories are that David Moyes is fantastic when he's got an average squad to work with. He will create a team that is more than the sum of its parts, as sort of previously discussed. Once he gets given a better squad and a higher caliber of player, and we have indisputably done that this over the summer, he is slightly less comfortable. And actually, the reason there were lots of positives from last night is that our three sort of major signings from the summer were all great. Like, this was Paquetá's best game for West Ham, and he showed the kind of aggression that I think he isn't sort of fully credited for, because he's got all the technique, which is often a bit superfluous. Actually, he's a sort of flary player, but he's all over the pitch last night. Scamacca, scored really nicely. I still think that there's a bit of the sort of Sebastian Haller about him, in that I think he's probably a great striker. I'm not sure he'll work in the Premier League, but Agüero, he looks really solid. We saw at the World Cup, and this was the first time the three of them have played together. So, and we were actually seeing that when a new player joins a club, I think it's 50% the player. Are they good enough? Are they adaptable enough to fit the new club? And it's 50% the club being able to kind of blend them in. And that's the bit that we failed at this year. And last night I thought there were some positives there. Leeds, by the way, they're good. Wilfred Nyonto, which is one of the most satisfying names to say, Nyonto, I think, in the Premier League.
Like gnocchi.
Wilfred Nyonto, who's already an Italy international. We're talking about like really savvy signings. They got him for like £3 million or something over the summer from the Swiss league. You know, him and Somerville are two of the most exciting young players in the Premier League, although Somerville should not have been on the pitch after...
Oh, do you think?
Oh, my God. They didn't show this on the highlights, which was really annoying. So he basically put in a kind of retaliatory... Is that a word? Put in a retaliatory, you know, horror challenge on Soufal. Wound him up.
No, they
right?
did show that.
But what they didn't show is when Soufal got subbed off because he'd been hurt and he's knackered and old, he rolled his sock down and you could see the bloodied imprint of Somerville's foot just below his knee. And I was thinking, Soufal, like, why didn't you get your knee out for VAR when they were sort of reviewing the challenge? Because honestly, Somerville has absolutely knee got away with that. Leeds good. Leeds good, Somerville naughty.
So I must admit, I only saw the highlights of this, Benji, but from them it did seem like Leeds were substantially the better side. Their goals were really quite sexy, as opposed to West Ham's, which were A, penalty, and B, an entirely gifted goal.
Yes, Leeds' goals were lovely.
Yeah.
And they were probably better for the first 20 minutes than the last 20 minutes, and West Ham were the better in between. Okay. The draw, I think, was
draw's fair,
fair yeah. result. Really good game, though. Real sort of rip-snorter.
Okay, you've got Brentford away in the FA Cup on Saturday. You're going along. Brentford, of course, the team who beat you, 2-0 last weekend in the Premier League.
Yeah, they'll probably beat us again. But it's the Cup, so we're taking sort of 3,000-4,000 down there. Never been to the GTEC, quite excited by that. Yeah. More excited about dinner in Chiswick afterwards.
Where are you going?
I think we've booked a place called Annie's.
I was just going to say, you're going to Annie's?
What's Annie's? Yeah. Is it good?
I would. That was the first place that came to mind when you... Because there's other places, that the very posh French one.
What's that?
It's got a Michelin star in that.
Has it? I don't think you can do West Ham away game followed by a Michelin star.
Listen up, Charlie just took out a long chat about Annie's restaurant. But if you're curious, why not go along and see for yourself? What's this? Nottingham Forest winning away for the first time this season, scoring a goal on the road for only the second time this season. Mind you, they were playing at Saints, a game in which there was only one shot on target and it was Forest goal. Sounds like fun. Was there much to report from this, Duncan?
Well, Southampton were very, very bad. That's four defeats in a row. That's looking pretty... Teams at the bottom of the league this season have tended to do quite well. There's been a lot of wins by the bottom team, but Southampton kind of look like they're settling in for a good old stretch. But Forest, I mean, you know, everyone wrote them off. That's all four wins this season, 1-0. Three of them with the one you getting the winner as well. So that's working. Obviously, the Emmanuel Dennis one, less so. But yeah, I think for Forest, I mean, as we said, it's their first away win in the Premier League since the week that Jamie Oliver launched Thai green curry on the Naked Chef in 1999, which was quite a seminal moment for the UK. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Why was that seminal?
Everyone started making Thai green curry for, what, a year, I reckon?
Did he invent Thai green curry?
He didn't invent it, but he did it on the telly and everyone was like, oh, yeah.
They've not been winning on the road, but they've only had one defeat in their last seven in all competitions, home and away, and only one in their last five in the Premier League, Forest, as they climb out of the bottom three. They're up now in 15th place, Everton dropping into the relegation zone. West Ham, Benji, still only goal difference outside it. As for Saints, who are rock bottom and 3 points from safety, widespread suggestions that Nathan Jones is already hanging on by his fingernails, which in his case, of course, will be tricky on account of his habit of biting them.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously had a very difficult spell at Stoke when he left Luton the first time and then went back to Luton, and maybe he just works well in Luton, like EasyJet.
And its destinations. Also, Gatwick.
Yeah, right. Other
I'm not
airports
sure
are available.
Well in Luton.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fine. But yeah, I mean, we have seen, obviously, in recent seasons, clubs make numerous managerial changes during the campaign. You know, like Fulham have done it, made a habit of it. Not this season, I wouldn't think. But, you know, go through three managers in a single season. So it's not unheard of. But
Watford.
Yeah, well, yeah, Watford do it in a month. So, yeah, so I think he probably is under a bit of pressure already, yeah.
With Forrest as well, I'm confused as to what we would learn if Forrest turn out to, you know, stay up and have done the right thing. Because the lesson with Fulham a couple of years back was, whatever you do, don't buy loads of random players and throw them together, because that won't work. And now Forrest have bought loads of random players, thrown them together, and it's sort of starting to work.
I think the lesson is that Steve Cooper's a really good manager, because he obviously took him all the way up the Championship last season. He basically got an entirely non-new team, a new squad at the start of the season. And obviously it took him a month or two to get up and running, but now they're looking all right. I mean, you wonder, he probably doesn't want them to sign loads more players in January, I would think.
Apparently they're going to, says Forest fan Nick Miller. Well, let's take advantage of the fact that for once we've got no Forest fans in to move on from that club and talk about some of the other action. Also this midweek, before we get onto the FA Cup, you had Arsenal-Newcastle 0-0, Villa 1, Wolves 1, and Fulham beating Leicester 1-0 away. Crikey. That's their third win in three. Very nice. They're only goal difference behind Liverpool in sixth place. There you go.
And they've equaled their tally from 38 games in their last Premier League season.
And two more
already.
Two more than they got in the last time they were up before that. So it's going well. I mean, they've kind of been overlooked a little bit because of your Brentfords and your Brightons. But it's, you know, I think, you know, if Forest are looking good, I think Bournemouth have got enough to stay up probably. And Fulham as well. So we could be looking for a relatively rare all three promoted teams staying up season.
Mm. Right. And Chelsea third best side in West London at the moment. How about that? Chelsea, of course, go on Thursday evening against Man City. Aston Villa's game with Wolves saw them come from behind after Daniel Podence opened things up for the visitors. Danny Ings with the equaliser there. What about Arsenal-Newcastle? I found it oddly thrilling, this game. Arsenal's attempts to break the deadlock, but goalless it remained.
Newcastle were very... I mean, we've come to expect this level of sort of doggedness and housing, for want of a better word, but they were extraordinary in both senses. I mean, they really put in a shift, and clearly they were committed to frustrate in every way that they possibly could. I mean, it was almost like Simeone Atletico at times. I mean, there was one period where clearly before the game, they decided they were going to go down, take the sting out of the game, you know, because there's not really, you know, when a team's building up ahead of steam, wins a corner or wins a few throw-ins and the crowd's up, if you then go down, you do take the sting out of the game, and there's nothing that can really get that back. Like, once the momentum's gone, it's sort of gone, and you never really get that time back. And there was a point at which not one, not two, but three of their players went down injured, and you kind of thought, that's maybe making it a little bit obvious that this is premeditated. But they, you know, they were really good. They defended brilliantly. And Arsenal had nothing attacking-wise off the bench. You know, they've got some injuries there. And, you know, the only sub they could bring on was Tomiyasu for Ben White. You know, straight sub at right back probably wasn't what was hoped for. But they didn't have anything. And, you know, they still almost nicked it. Pope made a great save from Nketiah.
There were a couple of penalty shouts as well.
There were. And I think the pull on Gabriel, just that was a penalty. A bit odd. You know, we're told that the bar has been raised now for intervention, but I think the consensus seemed to be that there should have been an intervention there. But I think that it's not a disaster for Arsenal. You know, they extend their lead, but I think they would have... nicking that game would have been massive for their belief.
Mm. Howard Webb behind that raising of the bar, encouraging a more lenient attitude from referees, which, you know, if it's going to mirror his officiating of the 2010 World Cup.
Common sense. All we want is common sense, and now everyone's going, actually, no.
Kung Fu kicks.
Consistency and violence. No, I mean, look, Eddie Howe was born in Amersham, which is very near Wickham. Wickham are the unrivaled masters of this, the dark arts in current English football. And I mean, I saw a lot of similarities there. I mean, I don't, you know, I might be biased because I follow a team that does it quite a lot, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think a bit like you have pantomime villains in pantomimes. You kind of need that. I think you kind of need that little bit of. You know,
I totally agree. Yeah. I loved the back. Newcastle's back five were brilliant in that game, and they did everything. They did everything you need to do to stop a really good side from playing well. And Dan Byrne, by the way, I will never not find Dan Byrne as a left back weird. Yeah, but second club in a row now, he's doing it. And it, you know,
he
you look at this game
all
in advance
as well, which I so, like. He's always laughing.
Yeah,
like,
he's a real character.
Just chuckling away.
He's a character.
Towering over
and he stopped Bukayo Saka. Like, if you'd looked at this game in advance, it'd be like, right, okay, that's going to be a problem for Newcastle. Saka up against Byrne, but Byrne won. The you know, fair chops to the big man. It's great.
Very nice.
Celebrating Saka overran, the ball went for a goal kick and Byrne celebrated as if he'd scored at the end.
Brilliant.
I mean, and he said afterwards, which is true, Joe Linton helped him out massively with how hard he worked. And that has been a thing with Newcastle. They all work so incredibly hard. I mean, Saka got the beating of him a few times, Byrne, but overall, he played really well.
Okay. How significant do you think that those drop points, is this the beginning of Arsenal's lead crumbling? They go a point further ahead of Man City, ahead of the Chelsea game Thursday evening.
I mean, even if City beat Chelsea later today, they'll be 5 points behind, which historically at this stage of the season should be enough for Arsenal. I mean, there have been meltdowns in that position, but they tend to be rarer. I mean, I think obviously the next game is huge, isn't it, in the Premier League, because it's Spurs away. I mean, if they lost that and City did, there is the potential, but Arsenal made such a good start that they're in the position to be able to bring this home.
Can we all just now say it's theirs to lose? Like that is the situation with Arsenal. And also, I think the more we say that, the more likely they are to bottle it as well.
Which, Benji, you're taking a perverse delight in the idea.
Not at all, Jimbo.
It's very much the same kind of feeling as that Leicester season, isn't it? Where they kept winning and you're like, well, they can't actually win the league. And then it gets to the point where you're like, they might be with a chance of winning the league.
Let me just say something nice about Arsenal, because they are their team is actually really predictable at the moment. I know we talked about how they didn't have much off the bench, but I think that's a real strength in Arsenal. Like, you can name their team pretty much every week, whereas City have always got to make these decisions, and and there's this kind of uncertainty there.
But again, like that Leicester team,
exactly,
in the league,
right,
that you knew at the 11 players every week.
Exactly right, I agree.
Fair enough. Well, plenty of time indeed thus left for us in weeks to come to discuss the title race. Next up, let's shift ahead to this weekend with the third round of the FA Cup.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
FA Cup third round, everybody. Are you excited? I am. 32 matches. There's non-league teams. There's all Premier League clashes. There's all sorts of stuff. Probably the headline clash is Man United against Everton. And that's actually the game which kicks off the third round of the Venerable Cup. Friday at 8 o'clock, Man United-Everton, which was twice an FA Cup final, back when it really mattered as well. 1985. Ooh, what's that I'm hearing? Paul Hardcastle's 19, which was number one at the time, as these two teams met at Wembley in a game which saw the first ever red card in a final.
McGrath. Oh, mistake by McGrath. Peter Willis is going to send Kevin Moran off.
It was a 1-0 win for Man United, even after Kevin Moran got sent off for that challenge. The first one ever to see a player red-carded, Duncan.
Yeah, and I just remember as a kid, that was, I don't remember the final, but I remember people, the fact there'd been a red card in an FA Cup final was seen as this horrible thing that brought the nation to its knees. A bit like Ray Wilkins getting sent off in the 1986 yeah. World Cup. It was like, how can this happen? How can this, the Corinthian spirit
has gone?
Now, yeah. I mean, if there isn't a red card within the first 10 minutes, I'm turning it off.
and it really was a red card, although the pundits at the time were pretty shocked that it should be sanctioned to that degree. But he really took out Peter Reid. The two teams met 10 years later and Everton got their revenge in, again, a 1-0 win. Paul Rideout with the only goal in that match for Joe Roar's side. That was, Everton fans will know, the last time they won a trophy. What do you envisage happening this time around as Man United and Everton meet Friday night? Do you anticipate a lot of changes from Frank Lampard after that was seen as a significant blow to his status at Everton when he did that in the League Cup against Bournemouth?
I think for teams that are in a bit of trouble, and I include West Ham in this, the FA Cup now, you have to deprioritise, I think. You've got to play the B team and you know, focus on the Premier League game the week after. So, yeah, lots of changes. West Ham, we've got the big one as well, the Europa Conference League coming up, returns in March. So, I think our focus needs to be on that rather than this little FA Cup thing.
Okay. I mean, we were talking about Bournemouth and Man United.
Sorry.
Fair enough. Man United, who we haven't touched on their game on Tuesday. It was a 3-0 win over Bournemouth as Man United picked up their sixth win in a row in all competitions. Ever since that derby defeat, they've been on fire, Charlie.
Yeah, Man United are interesting. Like, they are going under the radar a little bit, as the cliche goes. I mean, they're joint with Newcastle. They've got joint points. They've got a game in hand with regards to them. So they're building up some momentum and they look like they've got a pretty settled side. Rashford's playing really well, scoring a lot of goals. I think Casemiro has unsurprisingly been a brilliant signing. He's come in and really elevated them. Christian Eriksen, Bruno Fernandes are in good form. So I think they're 9 points off Arsenal. And the question now for them is it about sort of consolidating, trying to cling on to a top four place, or do they have the potential to go even higher? You know, if we're talking about Newcastle as being in that scrap for the title, well, United could go 3 points clear of them if they win their game in hand.
Mm. All right. Everton, meanwhile, in a very different state of affairs, and Benji, you saying they should take the hit and focus on their issues at the bottom end of the Premier League. But Frank Lampard, does he have the luxury of that choice? As I say, there's all sorts of word that they might be looking to replace him if things go badly in this match.
Who's out there, though? I was thinking watching...
Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, but... Yeah, it's not. That would be just the same sort of decision again. I was thinking with Villa.
They both manage Derby County, but I would say.
But just sort of
really more spectacularly, no?
Elite former player rather than elite manager. I was thinking watching Villa with that they look so much better,
right?
With Unai Emery, and I do wonder if he was the best possible manager for a non-Champions League club out there.
But they've tried a Spanish fella there. They had Rafa Benitez. That didn't work either.
Yeah. Who had a better record at this stage than Lampard does now?
Well, so.
Yeah. Opetegui also going to Wolves. I mean,
agreed.
They are running out of those options.
No, and I thought Wolves looked better as well. But I think,
I mean,
Everton have waited too long, maybe.
Sean Dyche has been linked, and, you know, with McNeil's there and Tarkovsky's there as a sort of vanguard, you know, go and warm it up, lads. But would that, is he the right person for Everton? I don't know. It doesn't feel like it.
I would love it if he was, because I think you worry with Sean Dyche that he's like, you know, a bit like Nathan Jones. Like Dyche only works in Burnley, whereas Jones only works in Luton. But I'd like to see what Dyche at another club looks like, because he's clearly a good manager.
Would you like to see what Dyche looked like at West Ham, Benji?
No thanks.
All right, then. Elsewhere in the FA Cup this weekend, that Friday night game between Man United and Everton is on TV, excitingly. The other ones you can watch on television are Saturday's Sheffield Wednesday against Newcastle United and the holders Liverpool against Wolves. On Sunday, Cardiff City against Leeds United at 2, and that's followed by Man City Chelsea again at 4:30. And then on Monday, Oxford United against Arsenal. Which games have you got ringed in red?
Yeah, Cardiff Leeds stands out for a few reasons. I remember the game 21 years ago really clearly.
What happened then?
Well, Leeds were going there as probably the best Premier League team at the time. It was in the David O'Leary's babies era. And then the actual game was mad. It was Ninian Park in those days, well, all days, was a fairly intense place to go. Sam Haman. Yeah, walking around the pitch during the game. The Cardiff fans doing their...
Why was he walking around the pitch?
No one actually knows. I mean, he was milking...
I think he was just geeing the fans up.
Was he leaving? Was he going for an early bath?
No, he was literally like, you know, like a mascot would. But,
I see.
Yeah. But then the Cardiff fans were doing their Ayatollah chant, which was, you know, popular in the day.
Okay.
Confused?
So they were chanting at Sam Haman to do the Ayatollah.
So it dates back to the 1990s, where right. they got it off some Welsh punk band who had been inspired by the funeral of Ayatollah Khomeini back right. in 1990. And I think he...
Are you reading this off Wikipedia?
No, I'm actually looking straight at you in the eyes. But it was like a waving your hands above your head sort of movement.
Like you're doing a throw-in?
Yeah, kind of.
Or okay. if you had a big perm, fluffing it.
And you were fluffing it.
Yeah. Anyway, I remember going to a game at Cardiff that season, and when the whole ground did it, it was quite a sight.
That certainly sounds like fun. Are you envisaging a game that's going to be talked about in 20 years' time from this weekend's action?
Probably not.
Okay. Anyway, it's happening Sunday at 2:00. The Bluebirds are on a 7-game winless run in the Championship. Benji, what are you looking out for? Is it Gillingham Leicester? Could it be? Because then I can mention this extraordinary stat about Gillingham, who are the team bottom of the entire Football League and also a side that have scored just 7 goals in their 23 league matches this season, but did still manage to knock Brentford out of the Carabao Cup on penalties. Oxford against Arsenal Monday night. Arsenal up against Josh Murphy after facing his twin brother Jacob in that Newcastle clash on Tuesday.
That's another game that was played about 20 years ago, and Arsenal won. And I think it was the game Bergkamp scored his 100th goal for Arsenal.
You're absolutely right, Charlie. Well, I don't know about the Bergkamp thing, but certainly this FA Cup third round 20 years ago, they met at Highbury and Bergkamp scored. It was a 2-0 win. They won the cup that season. Crikey.
I'm pretty sure it's 100th, because then Henri got his 100th for Arsenal about a week later.
Nice. Sheffield Wednesday up against Newcastle, both teams on 13-game unbeaten runs. Duncan, you see Sheffield Wednesday quite a lot, I imagine, with your Wickham currently being in
twice
League
a
One.
Season, yeah.
Yeah. Twice a season, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, that's more regularly than I suspect the rest of us.
Yeah, true. They've had a strange season Wednesday this year. They started really well. They were playing some really good stuff. They're very reliant on Barry Bannon, who hadn't missed a game for years.
He's still going.
Yeah. He's brilliant. And League One, he's like a class above, but he's recently picked up a few injuries and they've sort of stumbled a bit. And Plymouth and Ipswich have sort of edged a bit ahead of them. So they're still probably favourites to go up. But to Benji's point a little while ago, for Sheffield Wednesday, this is where the FA Cup, I think, has struggled a bit recently. So I think Sheffield Wednesday will put out a weakened team because they're more concentrating on getting out of League One back to the Championship. So, you know, go back 20, 30 years and a League One team home to a team in the top four of the top flight would be massive. And I'm not sure whether it will be as massive as it could be.
I'd like to see a five-a-side team of mercurial, diminutive midfielders who drop down the divisions later in their career. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about Barry Bannon here, and are exceptional. Because I'm also thinking of Wes Houlihan at Cambridge.
That's interesting. I must admit, I'm a bit disappointed that the non-league clubs in the third round aren't getting a a taste of the TV action. Boreham Wood are hosting Accrington Stanley, which somehow has failed to trouble the schedules. Also, celebrity streaming content's Wrexham will be making the trip to Championship side Coventry City.
Are they not on telly, Wrexham?
No. They're short of TV.
But Wrexham is the sexiest club around these days, surely.
Are they?
Yeah. Do you not? Are you not? You don't like
I think
that whole thing.
I gave it a go.
Come on, bar humbug, James.
That's, no, it's good. That's serious.
I don't think it is.
What?
I think they've got one of the more remarkable stories, and they made it all about these two guys who were famous anyway. I don't want to know about that. I want to know about the whole.
I think they mixed up quite well.
Did they? Because the first half hour, it was all about.
No, later episodes, they really focus on, you know, some really obscure people.
They finally get around to actually speaking to the people from the club, did they? That's nice.
I fell for it. By the end of it, I was just like, yeah, go Wrexham. Right.
I'm a busy guy and there's a lot of great TV out
there. There is a lot.
Paul Mullen, I've starred him on Footmob because I need to see what he's up to. So.
He's great fun. And he with his anti-Tory boots. Mm. Yeah, I think they've got lots of... Why are they not on telly? Sex appeal
I think, but
City.
That's the other thing with the FA Cup. I think if it was Wrexham v Coventry, I think it almost certainly would have been on TV. But the fact it's they're away kind of lessens the...
Where are they? Accrington Stanley. Who are they?
Was that Who are they?
Or was that Boreham Wood?
They are going to be at Boreham Wood.
Boreham Wood, isn't there like a nuclear bunker near there?
There's
as well?
A TV studio at Boreham Wood.
Okay.
So it's like 15-1. That was made at Boreham Wood.
They're literally around the corner and they couldn't take the TV.
They're the real life Wolford Town.
Yes, indeed they are. Indeed they are. Oh, producer Charlie's just come up with another non-league team. Hello to you, Chesterfield. You're at home to West Brom. But you knew that anyway.
Rich FA Cup history, Chesterfield.
Sean Dyche
penalty against Middlesbrough, the 3-3 in that 97 semi-final.
All right. Since we're doing history, Charlie, with your Galaxy memory, do you remember when Sheffield Wednesday met Newcastle in the Premier League in Bobby Robson's first game in charge?
Yes, I do. It was 8-0, wasn't it, or something mad. And Shearer got 5, I think, in that game.
Wow.
In October 99. September 99, that sort of period.
I don't have a date, but you do. I mean, those facts, they're all absolutely spot on. Remarkable. Remarkable stuff. Well, that is the FA Cup third round. Looking forward to seeing what happens. And, of course, on Monday, we'll be here to talk about the action that's taken place by then. That wraps it up for today's show, though. Many thanks to Duncan, to Benji, and to Charlie. And producer Charlie, new listener. Listener, Sunday night, if you fancy a bit of Serie A, just to let you know that Italy's top flight has returned. Wednesday, all 20 teams were in action. There were some pretty significant results as well. And we'll be doing a bit of Milan-Roma Sunday night live with James Horncastle. If you're not up for that, then see you here on Monday. And make sure, whatever you're up to, you have a great weekend. We'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and begambleaware.org.
The Athletic.